For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Now it's time for our Friday Forum, when we look back at some of the news stories of the week, and we'll also preview what we might expect from the Fine Gael Ardhéis, given the attention on Simon Harris as the new leader of that party and prospective Taoiseach, given the number of independents he's round up for security when that vote happens on Tuesday. Joining me now, Green Party Senator Pippa Hackett, Minister of State for Land Use and Biodiversity, Louise O'Reilly, a Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal, and Christina Finn, political editor with the journal.ie. Good morning and welcome, good morning. Let's talk about Simon Harris, first of all. So as the dispassionate voice among us here, what do you think, Christina, of what he's going to do? What do you expect from him?
Yeah, well, I think the Ardhéis, his first one as party leader, is going to be an interesting affair, I think, over the next couple of days. He'll be down in Galway, and I think everyone will be kind of looking at his speech that he's going to give on Saturday evening. You know, that's going to have to set out a stall about what he's going to try to achieve within the 12 months that he has left in government. You know, it's going to be difficult because the programme for government is already agreed. So, you know, if you're coming out with trying to bring in new policies so late in the day, is that going to fly with people? Look, within, you know, government, I think it's been a quick changeover. You know, I think ministers are saying they expect it to be a smooth transition. But look, you know, a changing of the guard somewhat is always going to perhaps unsteady the ship. And I think you'll see the likes of Micheál Martin trying to steady that over the next couple of weeks and months. I think, you know, Fianna Fáil members that I've spoken to, you know, they're happy enough, but, you know, they're questioning, you know, Simon Harris.
Well, Simon Harris is going to try and focus his party on certain issues, and other parties like the Greens in government and Fianna Fáil may not like to be tarred with that particular blue brush.
Exactly. And when we're heading, you know, who knows when the next general election will be, you know, could be in the next couple of months. And even if it is within, you know, next year, that's a pretty relatively short time frame in terms of politics. And Fine Gael and Simon Harris are going to want to have clear wins that they're going to try to point to. So is that going to be at the detriment of other parties like the Greens or Fianna Fáil? And look, he's been hard at work over the last number of days rallying up those independents. Yeah. And, you know, while he's saying that it's not transactional, that it's just like, please support me in this vote. Look, like we all know, you know, support comes, I think, with a price on it. Promises were made to those independents when they pledged their support for Leo Varadkar. My understanding is they're going to want a recommitment of those promises made for those projects in their constituency. So we have the likes of Michael Lowry out speaking about the University Hospital in Limerick, a huge issue at the moment in terms of how that's being managed. And other independents will have their own wish lists, I think, that they'll want to make sure.
However, all of these things have to come through the programme for government, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Louise, what do you expect from him? I mean, what you want from him and what you expect from him are probably two different things.
Well, what I expect is more of the same. The man has sat at the cabinet table for 8 years. In that time, homelessness has increased to beyond record levels. The cost of housing has gone up. The number of people in emergency accommodation is spiralling. Rents are out of control. And we have a situation where we've an incoming Taoiseach, of course, with the support of the independents who will line up. They'll have to face their own electorate, by the way. That's their own business. But we have an incoming Taoiseach who is, what are we now, is it 10, 11 days since he was appointed by the Fine Gael party without competition. So we have this man coming into the job. He hasn't uttered a word on housing. And yet I will go from this studio to my clinic in Balbriggan and my clinic in Swords this afternoon. And I know, because I have a brief on the cases that I'm going to, that most of the cases I'm going to see, that the vast majority of those are housing.
However,
so it's very disturbing that he doesn't seem in any way interested or concerned.
You wouldn't expect him to steal his own thunder. You know, if he's got things to say, there's no point in saying them five times and then lose your big moment.
Come here and I tell you, this is not about his big moment, right? And that is where
for him it is.
He is making a fundamental mistake if that's what he thinks this is about. This needs to be about a reset. And that is why we think that now is the time for a general election. Let the people have their say.
Pippa.
Look, I think, as you say, and as Christina said, we have a fairly ambitious programme for government. OK, we're into the last leg, if you like, of government, clearly. But the priorities are there. Nobody can venture too far away from those. I know Minister Ryan and Micheál Martin had a constructive meeting with Simon Harris last week on that, and to, reinforce where we are, what we need to still achieve within the programme for government. So I think that's going to be central to the remainder of this time in government. I think, from a Green Party perspective, we've been we've been happy with the progression of the programme for government commitments that, we were, I suppose, responsible for. We're seeing our emissions now reducing. We're seeing the role out of public transport, more active travel. We're seeing, increased numbers of organic farmers, for example. We want to continue in government, work with our coalition partners. Clearly we come from different perspectives and different priorities, but we've worked well for the last 3.5 years.
But the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, has said he'll coalesce with anyone who adopts the Green agenda.
Well, I mean, look, we are competent in that sense, and we are collaborative. We've always been collaborative. We want to remain to be collaborative. Whoever we might be in talks with next time round, we have an agenda, we have our priorities, we look to the future. We're 10, 20, 30 years, future thinkers, have been for 40 years in the party, and we'll continue with that. We'll freely admit we will talk with anyone. And we don't do that just for any reason. There will be certain priorities, as we had in the last Programme for Government negotiations, and that will make the same.
I'm trying to drum up a bit of excitement here among the three.
I think the problem is that if he tries to deviate from certain policies that are already in the Programme for Government, he's automatically going to create a destabilising atmosphere within the Greens and with the likes of Fianna Fáil. I think it's interesting that we've continually heard of this reset with Fine Gael, getting back to basics. You've had the likes of Michael Ring and, Charlie Flanagan saying we need to, get rid of the late licensing laws, the hate speech laws. And now even today we've heard, Pascal Donoghue and Minister McGrath sort of speaking about watering down some of aspects of that hate speech legislation. So, we are seeing somewhat of a shift. And I think when we hear what Simon Harris has to say, I think on Saturday, setting out the stall of the priorities, look, I don't know if he could possibly tear up the Housing for All scheme at this stage. Do you know what I mean? But he does have to come out pretty clear, as Louise is saying, on housing. He did mention that it is one of the biggest challenges that this government has to face. But whether he's going to have any sort of room to reset that policy change.
To be fair to that, like, Christine, he mentioned that this is a big challenge. I mean,
well, it has
TikTok
been for
the Taoiseach, the minister, for stating the blindingly obvious, like it should be. But what we haven't heard from him is any concern, any plans, any intention to actually tackle this issue. And that is the reason, this government is so far out of touch, out of ideas, and they really are out of time. That's why we think now is the time for a general election, not another shuffling around. We do need, I fully agree, we need a reset. But that's not going to come with this government. They are wedded to their programme for government, and their programme for government is exactly what has brought us to nearly 14,000 people in emergency accommodation.
It's highly unlikely that you'll get the general election sooner than the very end of the time of this government, because if some people have a suspicion, and Fine Gaelers jumping ship obviously have a suspicion they would not get re-elected, you hang on to power for as long as you can, don't you?
Well, that's apparently what they are doing.
Isn't that what politicians do generally?
They are expressing no confidence in their own government in ever-increasing numbers, including the man who used to lead the government, or who will lead the government until at least next Tuesday. He's gone. The second in command is gone in terms of the Fine Gael party. And I think it's 13 now TDs that are also lining up to exit at the next election. That is hardly a vote of confidence in this government, or indeed in their programme for government. But we see it all around us, Pat. I'm not saying it for nothing. I will leave here. I will go to my clinics, and I will meet people who are facing eviction. We are at the 1 year anniversary of the ending of the eviction ban, and we have seen thousands of people evicted as a direct result of that. So, on the one hand, he might like to talk a good game, and at his own Ardesh, he's perfectly entitled to do that, and I'm sure they will absolutely love what he has to say. But really, on the nuts and bolts issues, they are failing to get the basics right.
Sorry, Louise, I just wanted to check something with you. You made a statement there that thousands of people have been evicted, yet the homeless numbers have not gone up by thousands. They've gone up, but not by thousands. Where have those people gone?
A lot of them are couch surfing. Some of them are living in overcrowded and inappropriate accommodation. Some people have found housing. I won't deny that. But for the vast majority of people, they are going from a bad situation to a worse situation. You've got people who are overholding. And Pat, the stress of that, that's not fair on landlords. That's not fair on renters. But they have literally nowhere to go. So if you're a man with a couple of kids, you know, and you've nowhere left to go, what are you going to do? Only be left in a situation where the government won't help you. You're left in a situation where you've no choice but to stay where you are. It is an incredibly stressful time for people.
I mean, you're part of the government, even though the Green Agenda, you're happy with the progress of that, but you're also responsible for the rest of it.
No, absolutely. And yeah, it is a three-party coalition, and we stand over all our decisions we make at Cabinet. Look, the housing situation is still priority, number one priority. Nobody likes to see anyone getting evicted. Nobody likes to see the numbers of homelessness numbers going up. And the way to deal with that is to make more homes available for buying, for renting, more homes available that are affordable to people. And we're building more homes last year than we ever built before. We've got more cost rental units available last year than ever before. And we're going to continue on that, guys, for this year. And look, we need to do more. I think everyone is clear on that. We need to deliver more.
I think Simon Harris understands that, you know, Sinn Féin housing is the one issue that they've been absolutely hammering the government on in terms of, you know, the failings that we've seen over the last decade from successive governments. I think if Simon Harris is coming in here and looking for a reset, it's the urgency that needs to be there. And that's what people have been calling for a long time, that COVID-style emergency, all hands on deck in terms of getting housing initiatives off the ground and not just, you know, tinkering around the edges. And I think if he tries to achieve that over the next 12 months, we'll see how he gets on.
Yeah, but they've been in government for 13 years, though. I mean, that's the fundamental point. Fine Gael have led 13 years of government with the support and otherwise of other parties, the Greens included.
One of the challenges, you know, around this is also the planning system, and we know we're overhauling that, and it's a massive piece of legislation. I mean, Sinn Féin actually went out of their way to delay that process.
No, we went out of our way to ensure that the planning bill was amended to make it fit for purpose.
You went out of your way to remove people off committees, so every vote took 8 to 10 minutes. Now, I know that has improved since, which is welcome, but those issues with housing developments caught up in the planning system, there's a multitude of reasons why there are challenges, and that's what we're trying to address.
There are reforms, huge reforms coming in the planning system, but I'm still not sure it's fit for purpose, because we've been calling on this programme for the last 10 years for a rules-based system so everyone knows where they stand. Developer, council and so on, and the applicant, they know where. 5 stories here, no exceptions, don't go crawling to the minister and hope to get a break. No, the rules are the rules are the rules, and until we amend the rules, that's what you live with. But for some reason, successive ministers for housing are unwilling to do a rules-based system where everyone knows where they stand. It's incomprehensible to me. Anyway, some breaking news. The IDF has dismissed 2 senior officers for serious failures over the aid worker killings. This is after the 7 people were killed almost a week ago, I suppose now. They described the attack as a grave mistake stemming from a serious failure due to a mistaken identification and errors in decision-making. And they express deep sorrow for the loss and send condolences to the families of the World Central Kitchen Organization. So 2 senior officers are dismissed, and they will formally reprimand 3 commanders, one of whom runs the Southern Command. The vehicles, the attacks were carried out in serious violation of the commands and IDF standard operating procedures. That's just broken. Christina.
Yeah, I think people will be flabbergasted to hear some of the language that's coming out about, you know, mistakes being made when you hear that those aid workers were killed in such a manner. I think looking ahead at even, I think people at home, what they're looking for is real action being taken.
They're claiming that there was a misidentification, that the aid workers were mistaken for a Hamas convoy in spite of the logos on the roof and the technology available to the IDF.
Yeah, and big pressure, I think, on Biden now at this stage. We've had that tense phone call that they described yesterday between Biden and Netanyahu about, you know, question marks over whether these arms or whether anything's going to happen in terms of the support that they're giving to Israel. I was there in Washington, D.C. over the St. Patrick's week and keeping a keen eye in terms of the language and narrative that was coming out. I thought it was interesting that, you know, after the chat that Leo Varadkar had with Biden in the Oval Office, you know, commitments being made about humanitarian aid, you know, them prioritising that and pushing that with the Israeli government. But Varadkar being very quick to say, you know, Biden said the arms are still going there. That's not going to stop.
I think, you know, dismissing a couple of officials is going to be, you know, small consolation to any of those families and the victims of that. Misidentification is a bit of a stretch, I think. You know, as you say, they're well identified, these.
But, you know, when you start trying to figure out why would.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
They do it because the implications for them have been quite severe. You know, for any commander in the IDF to order a strike deliberately on aid workers.
Absolutely. No. Why would they do? Why would they do any of it? I mean, the people from the World Central Kitchen were very clear. They submitted their route, the names of the people, to the IDF. They absolutely have to have known. You know, but we cannot lose sight
of
the fact.
That's what I'm wondering, because
that
I can't
get into the head of somebody who is capable of that.
The way that, you know, many, many thousands of Palestinians have died, many of them nameless. But suddenly you've got seven people who are aid workers from the West, if you like, and they are shot or bombed by the Israelis.
Can I just tell you something? 33,000 Palestinians are dead, probably thousands more in the rubble undiscovered. A minimum of 75,000 injured, some of those catastrophic. We have seven people that are killed, and this is proof. The IDF act with impunity. You ask me why would they do it? Well, they have killed 33,000 Palestinians, injured 75,000, and there does not seem to be any sanctions or any accountability on them. So why would they do it? Because they act with impunity, and that is what they are doing. So we really need our government to step up. They need to recognise the state of Palestine. They need to actively intervene in the South African case in relation to the genocide and the war crimes and really be proactive about that. And they need to ensure that they are really loud on the international
stage. I think it'll be
interesting
to see in the next couple of weeks and months whether that does ramp up in terms of the Irish government's response, because I think it has been slow to keep up, I think, with the public's calls. I think they would like to see a lot more. We do have Michael McGrath out today saying that certain investments that the Irish state have through ISIF is, you know, they're being pulled back, places that have investment in Israel. So that has been in train, I think, for a long time. I know Piers Doherty has his own bill.
That's actually a direct result of legislation that, that Piers Doherty had brought to the Finance Committee. That is, I understand, supported by the Finance Committee. So we really want to see the government embrace this now and run with it and not just, you know,
well,
the announcement of four divestments. We need to see that absolutely ramped up.
I mean, I think there are challenges with Piers's legislation in terms of the legality, but I mean, I think this is a welcome move today and might be the start of more, who knows. But I think in relation to, you know, our readiness, Ireland's readiness to recognise Palestinian statehood. I mean, the most recent European Council meeting, along with Spain, Malta and Slovenia, we released a joint statement that we're
ready to go. But it's so
ready
slow. You know, when you go to these European Council meetings, I've been there.
I think it's fair to say Ireland has led out on this from a European perspective.
I think there definitely is an argument to be made that we are one, probably a stronger voice along with Spain in terms of pushing certain agendas. But the European Union have real questions to answer in terms of the slow response I think they've had to what's been going on in Gaza. You know, I was there at the first council meeting when there was all night talks about just coming up with language about calling for a pause. You know, I couldn't believe it when it came out, to be honest. And I know, you know, we're coming from an Irish perspective and, you know, every country has different views on this, particularly, you know, Germany and Austria being very strong, you know, supporters of the Israel side. But I just think Ireland does have an opportunity, and I think the people at home will be pushing, I think, in the next couple of weeks to see a bit more, you know, that not waiting, I think, for everyone to get their ducks in a row on a European level.
I think that's
Ireland
what people want, and I think you see more and more the larger and larger numbers of people coming onto the streets in support of the people in Palestine. And really, they are urging the government. I wouldn't take it off the government, you know, for what they have done. And certainly internationally, there has been, you know, we have moved further than some countries. But we need to get right out in front now and show that leadership, you know, because what we saw with the killing of the aid workers and the fact that now the international spotlight is on it is exactly what I said. Israel act with impunity because there are no sanctions and they need sanctions.
To two other things. The first one is the lagging sales in EVs, Pippa. And this comes on foot of a few things. People kind of not really informing themselves about EVs. The price of EVs, of course, is always there. But also the diminution of the incentives to buy EVs.
Well, I mean, look, there's a bit of story about this, but I think to look at it in perspective, we have seen an increase in sales. So last year we sold, I think, a fifth of all new car sales last year in Ireland were EVs. You know, it was ahead of diesel cars and ahead of even hybrids.
Diesel has made a recovery of 9%, even though...
Well, even, yes, but I mean, you always have that. I mean, it is relatively new to Ireland, EVs. I'm a 3.5-year-old EV driver and I live in rural Ireland and it's been fine. I haven't run my battery flat and got caught. I think the challenges are around, you have the sense that you have the early adopters and now you have to get it more mainstreamed. But I mean, nobody can deny that the future of private motoring is electric. It's not going to be petrol or diesel. It's going to be electric vehicles. There are challenges, I think, mainly now about the infrastructure in terms of the charging points across the country. But we've increased that by 750 from last year's 2,500. That's going to keep increasing.
But don't you have to make people an offer they can't refuse? You know, make them affordable, give them incentives. And in terms of, say, company cars, the only way you're going to get a good second-hand market of EVs if companies buy the new ones.
Yeah, there isn't a second-hand market, but I was smiling to myself
my car's second-hand EV, so...
Go on, Louise.
Yeah, but if you talk to people in the motoring industry, your own personal experience, Minister, is not actually reflective of what's happening.
Okay, well, I don't know. I know lots of people with second-hand EVs.
Okay, and again, people in the motoring industry will tell you isn't a second-hand market. In order for there to be a second-hand market, there needs to be a critical mass of numbers, that's not there.
Politicians should look at one thing. The number of taxi drivers in Dublin who are driving EVs, and they do a lot of kilometres every day. Yeah. And the reason they did is they got a grant of some 20 grand to buy, a Volkswagen ID4 or whatever it might be. And they love them. And the passengers love them. Mm-hmm. So if you do the right things, people
absolutely.
Will
but I think people are very wary of, the last time the Green Party were in government, they told me I had to be driving a diesel.
We were misinformed, I bought a diesel car.
But I'm not prepared to buy another car off them, to be honest with you. My understanding is, the most fuel efficient and the most the best thing you can do is to drive the car that you have until it is no longer till it is no longer usable. There's no need to exchange your car if there's nothing wrong with it. Yeah. But the pressure to drive an electric vehicle hasn't been matched with charging stations, so people are anxious about that. But I'd like to see a greater focus on public transport to get people out of their cars altogether, no matter how the car is
powered. Invested in public transport like no other government before,
and still
the M1 is clogged every morning, and
worse than it has ever been, because my constituents have to get into their cars in the morning because they're not served by buses, because the buses are disappearing. I've raised this on the floor of the Dáil. I've raised this with the leader of your party on many occasions, and there has been zero action.
When we managed to get a lot of these public transport challenges through the planning system, they are chock-a-block between the metro and
there's nothing to do with planning. The buses don't turn up and down the base, Minister.
You can't ask the minister to micromanage the bus schedule.
You can ask the minister for transport
to take responsibility for buses that repeatedly don't turn up and to examine the contract that they have with private companies who are delivering this abysmal service. And I mean, I have people in my constituency, Pat, who are on a final written warning in work because they cannot rely on public transport. Now, those people will have no choice. If they can afford it, they are going to have to get a car.
But I think the cost of living aspect when we're talking about EVs has to be mentioned here, because, you know, the cost of buying a new electric vehicle, you know, it's a hefty price. And I think the uncertainty, I suppose, in the world at the moment, be it what's coming down the line with the economy or whatever else, I think people are a bit wary about making those larger purchases. Mm. But, you know, I think the supports, as you've mentioned, they've been there and they've been trying to get people to buy EVs for a long time. But, you know, there was a review, I think, in 2019 by the government, by the Department of Finance, saying, you know, that if they continue the supports, for people to buy EVs, that it's going to have a serious impact on the exchequer in the long run, and that they were recommending actually starting to curtail EV supports as the years go on.
It was moving the supports to a different part of the marketplace, because the incentives have been provided. They're still there. The cost of buying a new car is expensive. Okay, EVs might be a little bit more expensive, but the thing is they're cheaper to run, they're cheaper to service.
Curtailing supports at a time when they're falling is just not going to work.
We'll park that for the moment, if you'll pardon the pun, and talk about a United Ireland at the bargain price of 20 billion a year for 20 years. Louise.
Well, the paper that was produced makes an awful lot of assumptions. And actually, I was in Belfast last night meeting with a group of trade unionists up on the Falls Road in the brilliant James Connolly Centre. And they were quite angry at what was in the paper. I mean, I know some people are calling it a report. It'd have to be an awful lot more substantial.
But it was only about money. It wasn't about other things at all.
It wasn't. And it assumed that there would be zero growth in the north. And who I met yesterday evening were a bunch of people who were very interested in ensuring that, you know, the north, the economy in the north is developed so that it is a high wage, high productivity economy, so that there are decent jobs and that the growth will happen as a result of that, that there will be targeted investment and also a lot of cooperation north-south to ensure that we invest as an island. So, you know, the assumptions that were made by the authors of the paper were, I mean, highly erroneous, I would say, but also very, very inaccurate. And we know that other reports have been produced which directly contradict that. But all of this, Pat, all of this underlines the need for a citizens' assembly to be convened to discuss Irish unity so that we can tease out these issues.
Pippa.
Look, I think the report is there. There are, as Louise says, a number of reports, and they're all very useful because this needs a lot of analysis. It needs a lot of engagement. It's not just purely about the economics. I mean, there's a cultural piece there. There's a societal piece there that, you know, sort of gets ignored. We get a little bit obsessed with the economic cost of these things. And it's simply not going to be about, at some stage, embracing, wrapping the tricolour around the six counties. It will be a new Ireland if and when this happens. This will have to embrace different communities, different backgrounds. I mean, and the conversation really does need to be had. I don't think we're in this place yet for a citizens' assembly on it. I mean, the Shared Island Initiative does have dialogue.
It's just when people are dismissing the possibility of paramilitary violence from the loyalist side and the Republican side, it hasn't gone away, you know, to borrow from Gerry Adams. We had dissident Republicans with petrol bombs on the streets of Derry last weekend.
Yeah,
you know, how quickly things can go pear-shaped.
Yeah, and I think when we're discussing sort of the economics of it, there's a whole raft of things that have to be considered if we're, you know, looking to a border poll. You know, the identity of it, the flag, the national anthem, welcoming, you know, if the vote does go through of reunification, you know, finding a home for unionists and making them feel like this is part, they're part of this island as well. But I thought it was interesting, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the economics of it, like this is going to be one of, I'm sure, a very many number of reports that we're going to see over the next number of years about how this would all play out. You know, there's a number of case studies like, you know, German reunification. They're all very different. But I think it's interesting, like the Irish Times had a poll, I think, last year, and it was sort of asking about, you know, would you support United Ireland if you meant you were less better off in terms of, I think it was €4,000 or so down, and you know 44% said they'd be less likely to vote for that. So I think, you know, the economics and the money in people's pocket is going to be an argument that is made.
It is, but also people are excited about the prospect of, you know, a new and united Ireland and the prospects that brings.
Pippa.
But
and
we need to plan for it. We need to be prepared for it, and that requires a citizens'
assembly.
And
I think, look, it doesn't stop any of the activity that's going on between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland through the All Ireland initiative. We've got the first North-South Ministerial Council on Monday. I mean, that's the first since July 2021. So, I mean, we're moving, and that's, we have to keep building on those relationships.
We just have to leave it there. Green Party Senator Pippa Hackett, thank you very much. Louise O'Reilly, TD for Sinn Féin, for Dublin Fingal, and Christina Finn, political editor for thejournal.ie. Thank you all. A reminder that our items are uploaded as podcasts. You can listen to them on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.